Blow the horn. Go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
Keith fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can be playing against. And make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Hello and welcome to the Alabama Football Podcast, part two of our colossal build-up to the January 9th National Championship tilt versus LSU. Sounds good, right?
It does, man. I'm just glad, like we said earlier, it's just good to be here talking about this, and it's good the season's not over and we can still break down some Alabama football.
Absolutely. Well, in this show, we're going to talk about Alabama offense versus the LSU defense, a few special team topics, and we'll unleash our predictions. You ready to go?
I am ready to go, man. I think that when we look at the Alabama offense, we did so many things right. I mean, I think when you and I went down and broke down the last game, we were even surprised at how much we moved the ball like we did. I mean, you talk about moving it between the 20s, and we did that. Our first three or four drives were over 40, 50 yards, but we just didn't finish whenever we got into that, 20 to 25 yard line was just a stumbling block for us.
You pointed out a website, and it has a visual that to me is just magical. And I'm going to make sure that we have this posted on the site, alabamafootballpodcast.com. If you're getting us straight through iTunes, there's going to be a visual on the website that is just amazing. What it does is it demonstrates every drive in the first ball game, and there are 22 drives across the ball game, and it shows the start and stop of every drive. And so the Bama drives are in red and the LSU drives are in yellow, and just the proliferation of red on this picture is just stunning to look at it. LSU sustained, one, maybe two drives, you could say, that they sustained, whereas Alabama had three, four, five, six, seven drives of 40 yards or more. That's just amazing to me.
It just shows we had a very good game plan coming in. And as we break down this side of the ball, it's got to be more of the same. We got to keep doing what we were doing. And so we've had success all year with the passing across the middle, dragging the receivers, unintentionally, intentionally picking the other defender in the crossing patterns. We've had so much success with that pattern to the opposite sideline. Darius Hanks beat Tyrann Mathieu two or three times on that same route in the first game. We are not going to beat them deep with the ball. I think their recovery ability between Eric Reed and Mathieu is tremendous, and that doesn't even talk about their top corner. I really think that the short intermediate passing game, getting the ball to the running backs, getting the ball to the tight ends, is going to open up the running game. And then I think real quick, when we do open up the running game, I think we just need to really abandon running the ball wide. I know that you don't want to do that as a coach, but this is for all the marbles. These two teams know each other, and we're just not going to do much with a sweep or with a little cutesy reverse to Marquise Mays. Just run the ball between the tackles.
Yeah, I completely agree. At risk of tearing a rotator cuff, I'm going to pat ourselves on the back a little bit. I went back and listened to the pregame show that we did in November, and there were some key points that we talked about in that game. The short passing game was going to be critical. The power running game was going to be critical. Trick plays coming out of timeouts would be something that we might run and that we might, potentially even struggle with. And those are the type things that, the power running game was very good to us, and the short passing game was very good to us. LSU, after a long running play, perhaps, Trent's best run of the game, LSU has a lineman down, gives everyone a chance to kind of get their marbles back and do the play, the maze pass to Michael Williams. And,
At the wrong time. You got them on their heels, just pound their butt.
Yeah, at that point, we should have just continued to run the ball. But you go back to the three, and you and I spent some time, you know, rewatching the tape and rewinding a couple times and, you know, watching for a couple of key things. The three missed field goals, and I'm not going to count the one in overtime, but we could speak to it too, really. The three missed field goals, in every one of those instances, we had short passing game, power running game, move the ball, and then on the second and third down before we kicked on fourth down, we lost yards. And so on the first missed field goal, we got to the 24 but kicked from the 32. On the second missed field goal, we got to the 24, kicked from the 33. And on the third, we got to 19 and kicked from, well, I guess we made that one, but we achieved the 18 or 19 and then...
And still kicked a longer field goal.
And still kicked a longer field goal. And then in overtime, you know, I guess maybe that's the third one. In overtime, you know, we were sacked, I think, twice before we kicked that long field goal. And so there's a very real, it sounds crazy, but there's a very real point that says, you know, we could have taken a knee on second and third down on those possessions, kicked a reasonable 32-yard field goal, and won that game going away.
Oh, yeah. We would have been right in Shelley's wheelhouse.
And so if we don't try to get screwy with some of our play call and get, you know, over-aggressive, and we just stick to, look, this is a defense. We can't out-cute, but we can. They're a little undersized in the middle. They're a little undersized at the linebacker spot. This is a team that we can drive the ball on, and let's drive it as far as we can drive it and kick a reasonable field goal from there.
This is a team that we can drive the ball on, and this is also a team that's going to make mistakes. I mean, on the defense side of the ball, you know, they're averaging 7, 8, 9 penalties a ball game. They're going to have the penalties, and they're going to, you know, in the first matchup, I mean, we were handed 2 15-yard face masks, right? We were set up nicely with 2 big 15-yard penalties by them in that first ball game. But, you know, we just have to be able to be committed to the run, and we've got to see. I mean, I want to see 40 carries. I want to see 40 totes on the ball. I mean, we only carried the ball 31 times against LSU in that first matchup.
We're going to be able to carry the ball more because, you know, when we played them before, certainly we were playing to win that game, but we're also playing with the mindset of the season's not over. We've got, you know, critical games after this. This is it. This is the last game.
I don't think so, though. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but when you look at the numbers, you know, going into that game, and when I say, I'm not talking Trent, I'm talking about the team and just the number of carries.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Eddie Lacy was really banged up and has been suffering from that turf toe, and he had to be limited in the amount of carries that he could have back in November. But you take this 2 months forward into January, and then he has the fullness of the offseason. If he does have a little bit of a setback, he can run wild. You know, he can get twice as many carries. There's the opportunity to give him the ball that many times.
But in that first game, we could have done Jostin Fowler. We could have put somebody else in. What I'm focusing more on is we abandoned the run too much in that game for cutesy plays. We came into that game averaging 39 carries against Arkansas, 43, 43, 42, 39 against Tennessee, and then bam, against LSU, we only tote the ball 31 times. I'm saying I don't care who runs the ball. We've got to run the ball 40 times plus in this ball game because I think we can wear out this defense. Even with the depth that they have, I guess it's just the undersized speed nature that LSU has. If we're throwing the ball in the flats to the running backs, and we're throwing the ball over the middle to the tight ends, and we're doing all these crossing patterns, etc., even though they're running a lot of guys on that front line, they're going to get tired.
Oh, absolutely. And that's where I do think that, you know, we do need to do some short pass. I think we do need to run to the edges to keep them honest, but I don't think that's where we're going to make our bread and butter. When we do it, we're doing it to keep them honest and to, you know, stretch the defense. They're going to have to run and chase down that play. They will, especially early in the game, but if we can continue to drive the ball, continue to pound them, they're a team that is going to lose their composure. They're going to have some discipline lapses. And when they get a little tired, then I think attacking the edges, I think we can have some more success there.
Yeah, I hope we don't do the edges at all. I just don't see us getting much from that. What I would like to see, early in the year, we were doing a lot of pulling. We were doing a lot of reach blocking by our offensive line. And as we got later in the year, we kind of abandoned doing as much of that. And we started putting Michael Williams and Smelly in the H-back formation, even if we were in a two or three tight end set. And we started just letting them fill the hole and taper off the linebacker. And we had a lot of success of that in the LSU game. And I hope we do more of that. I hope we just let the offensive lineman block the guy in front of them and let Smelly and Michael Williams, let them go use their leverage and use their frames to seal the linebackers in the middle. And that's why I just really want to see us, you know, run the ball up the gap. I mean, to your point, you know, that big run by Trent was awesome. But then, you know, we had a two or three runs up the middle for 15 to 20 yards in that game. And I just think that was by far where I think, you know, we had the most success.
I kind of want to build on what you're saying with the offensive line. I think we probably will see some, you know, some traps and some pulls. But, you know, if we can block them head up with, you know, leveraging the tight ends, I think we're going to see certainly some of that. I was impressed, you know, during the game and then certainly going back and watching it again at the success that we had creating and maintaining a pocket for McCarron. There were times where he had, you know, he could stand back there and have a sandwich waiting to, for someone to break open. And so if we're able to do that, again, that helps us with a short passing. That helps us with some of, you know, even passes to the running backs. And then maybe finding a double move to strike downfield at some point to kind of keep them honest. But I think that we're going to be able to do that. You know, we're going to have Barrett. You know, he sat out the two games prior to the LSU game, you know, in the middle of the season. He's going to be fully healthy, not coming off, you know, injury rust, fully practicing. I think the offensive line is going to be up to form, and I think the potentially they're going to lay it to, you know, this LSU defense.
I think you're right there. And something else to speak to the sacking ability of LSU for a minute is when you went back and just kind of studied the stats on this team, it's really amazing that they rank as high as they do. I mean, here they are in a lot of categories, number two behind Alabama. But they are so susceptible, you know, to teams really controlling the ball on them. And what's interesting about their sacks is several ball games this year, they had 5 and 6 sacks in the game. But two of the teams that they had the toughest time with, had it not been for turnovers, you know, Oregon and West Virginia, They got no sacks against them. And they only got 2 against us where they were averaging 5 and 6 against most of their opponents. And so it goes back to, I really would love it if we come out to start this game. You remember the one drive where we literally passed it for like 6 or 7 first downs in a row this year?
Mm-hmm. Against Tennessee.
I want that. I'd love us to come out and just pass like 5 or 6 times in a row.
Well, that was one of the more glorious drives you're ever going to see in football. You know, that was the first drive coming out of half. Out of the first 10 plays, 9 went for first downs, and the 10th play didn't go for a first down because it went for a touchdown. I mean, that's that's what coming out of halftime is all about.
But that's how I'd like to start the game.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like us to come out early. And
I'm not going to root against that.
Just short passing, just lots of passing early in the game, a heavy dose, and just kind of put them on their heels a little bit.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And if we are able to get something going there with the short passing game and the lines blocking, what I would love to see us do is put a double move on Maurice Claiborne and catch him freelancing. He picked us off in the first game, freelancing off the tight end. And if we can suck him in, if we can show him a tendency that he studies his film. If we can show him a tendency, we can leave someone open over top.
And that speaks to your point real quick about doing what we do well. That was an example of, it wasn't a gimmicky play, but it was the only time this year I've seen us try to throw a deep corner post to the sideline to a tight end. I don't think we attempted that play the rest of the year. That's just not a good matchup against a speedy, fast, secondary like they have. It just goes back to what we talked about. I mean, the double move is something different, but if you're going to have your tight ends, and this, I guess this speaks to McCarron for a minute. McCarron has got to recognize that. The gunslinger in him that wants to make the big play, who's had a good year, if he steps back and he sees Morris Claiborne covering Smelly, they better be telling him this month, just look away from him completely.
Right, right. Well, if indeed, you know, Claiborne is, and again, Claiborne was covering someone else, and someone else was covering Smelly on that play, you know, when we went back and broke it down a little more closely. But if
he's got to recognize the freelance, though.
You know, that's what I'm saying. If he's shading to the tight end, somebody's wide open.
Right.
Because there's no way by design they have him covering the tight end.
I have been surprised this year at the success we have had with both Smelly and Michael Williams on a pure go route straight down the hash. I haven't seen a team stop that play all year. We have been able to complete it for 10 or 15 yards whenever we have wanted to.
No, they kind of trickle through like they're blocking a linebacker and they get open down the middle of the field. Yeah, there's a potential that we could strike on a play like that. Hey, what do you think about some of the talk of Dee Hart getting into the game?
I don't think we're going to see that.
You don't think so?
No, because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but his eligibility does not hinge on this game, correct?
I'm not sure what you mean when you say that. You know, he would burn his red shirt last game of the season if he were to play in it.
Yeah, see, there's no reason for him to be in this game. I'll just call it out. That'd be a dumb thing for Coach Saban to do. There's no need for that whatsoever. You granted it's for all the marbles, and it'd be nice. It'd be a nice wrinkle. I wouldn't burn a kid's season on one ball game.
I read something on BSR that I thought was interesting. They said that, you know, when Saban won the title at LSU, he did that very same thing with Travis Daniels in the championship game, or maybe it was in the SEC championship game, that he burned his red shirt that late in the season. And so that's one data point. And the second factor is, if Dee Hart's as good as advertised, then he potentially has NFL talent. And so he's not going to be here 5 years. And the counter to that is, if he is going to hang around for 5 years, because then maybe he's not NFL talent, then he's buried on the depth chart. And probably his junior or senior year, he transfers. And so we don't have, you know, the full use of his four-year eligibility plus a red shirt. And so when you think about it in those terms, if he's indeed 100% healthy and he can bring something dynamic to the game, then I think that's reason enough to play him. All of that said, I don't think he plays.
Yeah, I don't think he does either. I
wanted to put it out there and kind of see what you thought about. You know, if you look at the totality of it, it's not as dumb of a move as it may look like on paper.
No, that's true.
Well, what do you think about key players, Alabama offense, LSU defense? Who are some of your key players?
Well, I think we've kind of alluded to Chris Smelly and Michael Williams, and I think we'll throw Chris Underwood in there. Those are huge. I mean, our ability to be in that three tight end and two tight end set and what we can do multiples off of it really creates problems for defenses. And so those three guys have just got to have a great game. They've got to make each one or two big catches. I mean, I guess as we're sitting here talking about this specifically, you know, maybe Underwood catching a couple balls would be a little tight end wrinkle, because you know they're studying Smelly on film after the Auburn game, and you know they're studying Williams on film, and maybe something to your third tight end would be a nice wrinkle to get you a big first down. But those guys have got to have the key blocks, and they've got to be able to contribute a few passes. On the defensive side of the ball for LSU, I guess I first have to say that I hope Tyrann Mathieu has his worst game of his career. Can't stand the punk, and I hope he has a bad game. Sorry, LSU fans, but that's just how I feel. As far as the LSU players are concerned, I think the guy that I'm worried about the most is Eric Reed. He's got the ability to freelance like Claiborne, but he's got the big physical nature. I mean, he just looks good on film, man. He just pops out there. I mean, you and I were noticing in that game against us that we were not accounting for him He's a guy that I think we've got a scheme for in this game.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of start with LSU and head to our offense. But the player that I have down, key player on the LSU defense, is Eric Reed. And I think that's far and away the player that we need to watch out for. You know, Bama fans know his name because he picked the ball off the maze pass to Michael Williams. But going back and watching that film, the plays that he made, you know, you can have the interception. He made handfuls of plays that just, you know, knifing through, like you said, 12 yards out. He's not a factor against a running play, except for he knifes through and makes the tackle at the line of scrimmage. On the blocked Shelley field goal attempt, he's the one that was heads up, picked up the ball, you know, returned it, you know, across midfield. He was making plays like that everywhere on the field. It's like there were three of them out there. He was making plays. And so he's someone that we definitely need to track and locate as much, if not more, than any of their other defenders. I'm that impressed and convinced that he can be a key player for their defense.
Take nothing away from the rest of them, but he is just by far. I think him and Claiborne are by far their two best players, and Eric Reed just brings a linebacker physicality to him.
Yeah, I'm not mad at any of them. I was just head and shoulders impressed with what I saw from Eric Reed and watching the footage. And then from the Alabama offense, I think you're right in highlighting some of the tight ends and, in fact, the whole, you know, group of tight ends, that what they bring as a unit to the team, I think, is critical. You know, A.J. McCarron, if he does not throw a pick, we win this game going away. I think if he has sort of the Tommy definition of a successful quarterback play in the SEC, if he goes, you know, 16 for 21 and, you know, 200 yards and no picks, we win this game going away.
No, I agree with that. I think he just has to make good decisions and protect the ball and allow us to move the chains with the running game.
Talk to me about special teams. Ours, theirs, kicking, return.
See, you should kind of set this up for the listeners and for those that didn't get to listen to the previous podcast, the post game. You know, you got to kind of set it up for them when you were watching their punter in warmups. You know, we only punted twice in that ball game. But
you know what, though? You punt twice in a ball game and lose because you should have punted four times.
Yeah. Okay. But, you know, they by far have the nod when it comes to special teams. They said in the first matchup before the game that these two teams were so evenly matched that it could come down to special teams. Well, I guess my point here is I think we're better offensively for all the reasons we've mentioned, and I think we're a little better collectively defensively. So take the game away from special teams being a factor. Don't even let it be a factor. Don't let it be a pick'em. Let this game have the margin of points that the first game should have had, and then the soundness of your kicking game is not a problem. And it kind of goes back to what, you know, McElwain said before the Auburn game. He said, we're not going to be in situations to kick field goals because that's not, you know, we're going for touchdowns. Well, man, no offense to Cade Foster, but I hope he never kicks another field goal in his career at the University of Alabama, because that means that we didn't have to use him in long field goals in this game, and that means that somebody beat him out next year, because I just, mechanics, he's got to work on his mechanics.
Oh, my dear God.
I mean, yeah. He just has to work on his mechanics in the offseason, because his just mechanics are very quirky. It just looks more like a kickoff than it does a field goal.
Well, we went back and kind of broke down the film and looked at individual kicks and fast-forwarding or rewinding, and he looks like a folding chair collapsing when he's kicking a field goal. There's no fluidity. There's no motion that suggests that he's aiming the ball. In fact, we have brought in, during this sort of lull between the last game and sort of this bowl season, we've brought in an outside consultant to help us in the kicking game.
Really?
Yeah, we have. I'm hoping, you know, and I say this with a hint of sarcasm, but I think I mean it as well, not only to help, you know, Foster with his mechanics, but also to help the coaches in knowing when to kick and when not to kick.
That would be something that I think is key in this ball game, that sometimes it's okay to pin them in deep and let your defense come out there and make them have to drive, you know, the length of the field.
Yeah, sometimes punting the ball can be, you know, the right play. And, you know, speaking of punters, I think potentially one of the better players on the field and certainly one of the better performers at his position is going to be LSU's punter. I mean, he is a weapon. He is by far the best punter I think I have ever seen. And the fact that they can roll him out there, he can do the rugby style punting, which is something that we do struggle with. We've seen him flip the field. He's something that I think we need to be very cognizant of.
Hey, I think you need to take a minute for the listeners and just tell them a little bit about what you noticed in the pregame warmups the last time they played.
Oh, there's no question. I'm going to be in the dome early watching him warm up. You know, coming out of the halftime of the game in November, he was out punting the ball and just a manager just kind of flipping him the ball. And he was punting. He must have punted, you know, 10 or 15 balls, you know, from the opposite side of the 50 that were just, you know, like clockwork, hitting at the five and dribbling into, you know, some of them stopped at the one. Others, you know, dribbled on into the end zone. But if you've got a coverage team running down there, every one of those balls would have been stopped inside the three. And he was just doing that like clockwork. And at one point, he got bored doing that. And so he turned, kind of changed his trajectory a little bit. And we had a trainer or manager or whatever working with some of our other players, had his back turned to Brad Wing, you know, maybe 50 yards down the field, literally. And, you know, Wing punted the ball and it landed about a yard in front of the manager and just hit him right in the gut. It just hit right in front of him and bounced perfectly back, hit him in the gut. And you have to think, man, you know he did that on purpose. That's just amazing talent.
Did that just because he could.
Just because he could is exactly right. And so, you know, that's a show that I want to see just even before the game starts and certainly as he comes out to warm up after the half. But he's a sensational player at his position. In a defensive struggle like this where field position certainly matters, I think he's a weapon. I think he is one of the components that give LSU an edge in the special teams.
Anything else on special teams that kind of jumps out at you in this matchup?
I think we need to watch Tyrann Mathieu in his return game. Second half of the season, he's really busted out and had sensational punt returns. You know, you parallel that with us giving up big yards and even touchdowns in the kickoff return game. I know those two return elements have different, you know, different components. They're different players and structures in a lot of ways. But
those are extra yards.
Well, it's definitely extra yards, and it speaks to us struggling in some of the coverage and them succeeding in some of the returns. So that's something we're going to have to watch out for as well.
Well, what do you think about the score? How do you think the game's going to play out?
Yeah, you're exactly right. The time is here. We've talked circles around the game, and I think it's time to put it on the line. Who do you got?
Well, I definitely think the good guys are going to win. I think we're going to try to do a lot of what we did before. I do think that we're going to, you know, this time we're going to finish. And whether that means pinning them deep and making them go the length of the field, or just being able to not be so cutesy around the 20 or 30 yard line, I see us stopping their run early. I see us stopping the option. You know, I see maybe a spine CJ Mosley on the quarterback and taking him out of the game as far as his legs are concerned and making them pass. And if we can just get up a score and make them one dimensional, he's just not going to be able to deliver. I see something like a 23-13. The margin will not be as much as I was hoping for from the first game, but I see something like a 23-13 for the good guys.
Yeah, I'm not far off on you, and I don't want to just go all Dr. Phil on you, but I think the Tigers are incapable. They are physically incapable of wanting this game as bad as we do. And that's not a knock on them, and that's not a knock on their preparation, but you can't want something as bad as you can want it when you've literally had it wrenched from your hands and you could taste the win, and it just had that wrench from your hands, you know, literally. I think they can't want it as much as we want it. I think our players have prepared through this bowl season. They're ready to play. I think that the Tigers, in their psyche, they're going to say, oh, we got to play these guys again. And our guys are saying, yes, we get to play these guys again. And it's just, it's a subtle, but it's not subtle. And I think our guys are going to want it more. I think the rematch favors the aggrieved. I think it's the good team principle. You don't beat a good team twice in the same season. And we're not a good team. We're potentially a great team. And I just don't see us losing to the same team twice in a season. I think we take a 17-10 lead into half. And I think we build it into a 27-16 final margin. I think it's a contest probably up until the early minutes in the fourth quarter. And then we open it up.
Okay. Well, I'll take either one of those scores. I'd kind of take yours even more so than mine. I was hoping we'd win by about you know, two touchdowns the first game, and maybe we can do it here in the second game.
Absolutely. I think we will. I'm pretty confident that we will. I, in fact, you know, after going back and breaking down the film, I think I'm more confident this go-around than I was the first go-around. I think the Tide wins. I think it's 10-plus points, and I think we're celebrating on Bourbon Street the national title.
Well, I'm looking forward to that for sure.
Well, fantastic. Hey, thanks for listening. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Be sure to join us on Twitter, Facebook, subscribe to our newsletter. All of this can be done on the web, alabamafootballpodcast.com. Drop us an email, alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com. Find us on iTunes, the same name. Also, I want to give a special thanks to Herb FM. They're at herbfm.com. I want to thank them for sharing us with their audience. And until next time, roll Tide.
Blow the horn. Go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
All right.